148-145, no game scheduled tonight. NHL Blackhawks were off last night. They host the LA Kings tonight. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Monday, February 19th. Cloudy and mild, patchy fog throughout the day. Rain developing late this morning into the afternoon with thunderstorms possible. High today, 48. Tonight, we could see rain and thunderstorms and fog throughout the night. Some thunderstorms could produce heavy rainfall. So we do have a flood watch in effect tonight through Tuesday night. Tonight's low 42. Tomorrow, more rain likely. Tomorrow's high 56. Right now, fog in the area. Headlights on for safety. 39 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. Support for WGTD and the morning show also comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering online degrees in sustainable management and health information management technology. Online degrees for emerging careers from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside in partnership with UW Extension. To learn more, visit uwp.edu. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We will spend the next few minutes of WGTD's morning show talking about friendship, and in particular, friendship between women. There does seem to be something fairly distinctive between the way men tend to be friends and the way women tend to be friends. Again, it's probably at the risk of making some generalizations that don't always hold true, but many people would agree that there is something very special, particularly close, about the friendship between women. Or maybe another way to say it is that what draws women together and makes them close might be different from the way men typically are close to one another in friendship. And this can shift, of course, over the course of lifetime. A very interesting book about friendship between women has just been written. It's called I Know How You Feel: The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. It's written by F. Diane Barth, who is a psychotherapist from New York City with decades of experience. And she has a blog for the website for Psychology Today that explores many different issues, including that of friendship between women. And her book stems from a host of interviews which she did with a wide range of women talking about the role of friendship in their lives, the joys and the frustrations, even the heartbreaking sorrows that can be part of friendship. And she joins me for the next few minutes to talk about her book, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, again titled I Know How You Feel: The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. F. Diane Barth, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
So at what point did you start to realize that friendship itself would be a topic worthy of this kind of exploration?
It's an interesting question. I have worked with women for, as you said, for decades. And women always talk about their friendships in psychotherapy. It's just part of the fabric of our lives. But I was having a coffee with a friend, and only a couple of years ago, and we were talking about our friendship, which has been a very long one, but we don't see each other regularly. And she said, you know, have you noticed that friendships have changed in your life over the years? And I said, oh, yeah. And she said, you know, we started talking about how our friendship had changed and how other people, you know, friendships with other people had changed in a lot of different ways. And she said, I think you should write about that. I think people would be interested in it. And I started talking to people, and sure enough, it is a topic that men and women are very interested in. And so the book sort of evolved out of that.
Let's talk about the men versus women thing right now, because I think it's one of the most important points to make. That first of all, there's a real danger in making sweeping generalizations about how women are friends with each other versus how men are friends with one another, in the same way that we're really hesitant to make those kind of sweeping generalizations that once upon a time we would frequently make without any hesitation whatsoever. It seems to me that friendship maybe is one of those arenas in which it remains tempting to make those generalizations, because it does seem, at least to some extent, like there really is a distinct difference between friendship between men and friendship between women, at least typically. Can you just say a word about any hesitancy that you feel as the author of this book to be delineating the world of friendship in this way with women and men, and thinking about those friendships so differently? Is that really valuable? Is that really a good idea?
Well, it's a really interesting issue, because, you know, there is research, of course, that says that men and women deal with relationships in general in very different ways. I happen to be a person who doesn't like those kinds of generalizations, so I was probably biased as I was gathering my information, and my information was anecdotal. It came from lots and lots of interviews, but it's not scientific. So all I can tell you is that my experience was that many, many people feel that there are significant differences between men's relationships and women's relationships. And yet, as I was talking to both men and women, I learned that many women don't have the stereotypical relationship with other women that we sort of idealize and think of as the way that women relate. Many, many women, although there were many women who told me they did have these special relationships that had gone on since they were teenagers, and that where they understood each other perfectly. One woman said to me that she had, this was sort of typical, but that she had called her best friend when she was traveling for work and said to her, listen, if something happens to me, will you make sure that my husband buys clothes for every season for our children for the rest of their lives? And her friend sort of, there was a dead silence, and then her friend said, oh, you're just nervous about traveling. You'll be fine, but of course I will. And what she said was that this was, for her, the epitome of, you know, a friend really does know how you feel. A friend really does get you from inside out. But there were lots of women who didn't have that kind of connection, and who, many of them were actually embarrassed or ashamed, or told me that they weren't very good friends, or they were bad at being friends, because they didn't have that sort of typical female friendship idea. I cannot tell you the number of women who would say to me, I'm just not one of those women who goes off for a girl's weekend. And what I discovered was that lots of women actually have the kinds of friendships that men are supposed to typically have, which means they had friendships where they did activities with other women, but they didn't share details about their personal life. And yet, what I found was that those are friendships. Those are friendships that that are very important. And on the other hand, because I was talking to men also, I found many men who do have those kinds of deep emotional attachments to their male friends. They may not always talk the same way, because men and women often do talk differently. I mean, that's what Deborah Tannen's work is all about. But the kinds of friendships that both men and women have are not nearly as stereotypical, according to my interviews with so many people.
Hmm. You say early in the book that you talked with many women, and you even say you talked with women all over the world. Just give us a sense of just how many women you talk to, and if indeed they really are from all over the world.
Yes. I talked to close to 200 women, and it started with, I was just talking to friends and relatives, and friends and relatives would connect me to other people they knew. I knew people in different parts of Europe and South America, so I contacted them, and they connected me to other people. Then I met somebody who lives in the United States but is from Korea, and she connected me to some women in Korea. Same thing with somebody from China who connected me with people from China. I talked to people from different parts of Africa. So some of these interviews, and then all over the United States, some of these interviews I did by Skype. Some I did. I'm basically not a very outgoing person. And so my husband often would start conversations for me. So we would be sometimes in an airport, and he would start talking to somebody and say, well, my wife is writing this book on women's friendships. Would you talk to her? And so I talked to people from, you know, who were flying from all over the world to all over the world. And what was just fascinating was how much everybody wanted to talk about it. I did not find anyone who wouldn't talk to me. One of the things is I did make clear to everybody that I would not use the information about them specifically, that I disguise everything. So I change names, I change identifying information. But I don't think that's what made people talk to me. I think people really, in all over the world, at least the ones I came into contact with, this is a topic that is very dear to the hearts of many, many, many people. And it's complicated and confusing for many people, so they want to talk about it.
Right. They want to understand it maybe better than they do.
Right.
I wonder if, certainly it sounds like you did your very, very best to try to really talk to a wide range of people. I wonder if you were able to connect with people who we might think of in kind of the, I don't know how to talk about this women, for instance, living in poverty, women, for instance, who have been incarcerated, women, for instance, who are facing those kind of staggering difficulties. I only ask because I sometimes wonder what role friendship plays in the life of a woman like that, who is not contending with, you know, juggling a part-time job with getting their kids to soccer practice, but rather contending with issues that really have more to do with survival, in a sense. Yeah. I'm just wondering if that is part of this mix or if that is something for others to explore.
I did not. The incarcerated population is not a population I spoke with, and the very, very, very poor is also not a population I spoke with. I did talk to women who had grown up in countries that were under siege. They'd grown up during war and in terror situations. I talked to women who had been separated from their families. I talked to women who were working at very low-income jobs, and I talked to women who were struggling with. I talked to a couple of women who were on welfare, and I spoke to women of every different ethnic group that I could get a handle on. I don't have any idea whether that's not true. I have thoughts about whether what I found would hold true across the board. I talked to some women who had grown up in cultures where women were really truly second-class citizens. And what I learned from them, actually, One woman told me that she'd grown up in a culture where women really weren't supposed to talk to men, and it was because women were isolated from men. She grew up in what was a very female-dominated world. And interestingly, what she said is that the women that she knew and the women that she was most comfortable with were very comfortable with some things that many middle-class American women were not comfortable with, which is they were comfortable with expressions of anger, of jealousy, and of competition. That was just part of their world, and they talked about it or didn't talk about it, but it was a known part of their world.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with F. Diane Barth about her book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. I was struck by a question that you asked early on in the book, which is apparently a question you pose to just about every single woman you talk to. And that is basically, how do women connect? And I thought that was such it's a simple question, but it really gets right to the heart of the matter. And of course, really is touching on the profound matter of connection between two people, whether they're friends or relatives or acquaintances or colleagues or whatever the relationship happens to be, that state of connection between people is a very, very intriguing matter, and particularly when it comes to women who are friends versus men who are friends. What did you learn about that matter of the point of connection?
One of the things that I learned was that many of us carry around with us a fantasy of connecting that is related to what's really a middle school or early high school connectedness, which is, so I tell the story of two women, Liz and Eileen, who connected in that special way, in that special bonding way when they were in early high school. Their story, like several of the stories that I talk about, really goes through the book, because we follow them at different phases of their relationship. But they connected, what they describe as almost a magical connection. They sort of locked eyes and immediately felt some sort of connection. They sat down together at lunch, and they never stopped talking. And they became really, really, really close friends. That doesn't happen, let me just finish, but their relationship goes through many ups and downs, which is one of the things that does happen in many long-term relationships, that there are ups and downs that have to be dealt with. That's not how everybody meets. So one young woman who had recently graduated from college told me that, as did many of the college-age women I met, that she really missed that close, close connection that she had with women who had been in her dorm or who were in her sorority or who she'd gotten very close with because they were together all the time for 4 years. She said when she got to the town where she had her first job, she didn't know anybody, and she started thinking about how did she actually first get to know the women who became her friends. And she said she realized a lot of it was through doing activities with each other. And so she told me about, I have lists in the book, thanks to her, because she told me about a number of online sites that exist in most towns that you can go to meet up with people who want to do activities that you want to do. And she said, it's not like having a bosom buddy, but I found people that I could connect to in some of these things, and I was doing things that I enjoyed doing. I also talked to women who made friends with other moms while their kids were young, and that whole process captures one of the complexities of women's friendships, which is that there are cliques of mom friends, and I call them mommy cliques, that don't always accept new members. And so as women are trying to make new friends when they're going through a new stage of their life, which is having children, and almost every stage of your children's development is a new stage of your life, some of them were able to make friends with other women who were mothers of their kids' friends, and some of them were not. One woman told me that she felt like she was a working mom, and she said she felt like the moms who stayed at home were very uninterested in becoming friends with a working mom because they looked down their noses at her. And then another woman who was who worked at home, whose work was taking care of her children, said, "Well, the moms who work are so snobby; they don't think we are equal to them." So connecting is not always an easy thing, but I think that recognizing that that everybody's having some difficulty in these different stages is one of the ways people connect.
Interesting. Connecting over that sort of shared sense of this is sometimes really hard.
Right, exactly.
Commiserating with one another.
Yep.
The question reminds me of a very touching moment not too long ago on the afternoon talk show hosted by Ellen DeGeneres, who not long ago celebrated her 60th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
There was a two-part celebration, and on one of those days, her wife, a professional actress named Portia something or other, walked out, you know, surprising Ellen, and then surprised her with a really wonderful gift that ties into Ellen's extensive work and concern for animal welfare. And Ellen DeGeneres was incredibly touched by this gift and then said to her wife and to everybody watching that, you know, it's one thing to be loved. It's another thing to be understood. And this gift demonstrated how much Portia understands Ellen. She doesn't just love her, but she understands her. And it seems to me, I've been thinking so much about that ever since, that there are friends who probably think they understand one another, who might be very, very close, spend all kinds of time together, but maybe one friend really bothers the other or hurts the other or in all kinds of inadvertent ways makes life uncomfortable and never realizes what they're doing. And then there's other friendships that are not just affection, but also have this dimension of understanding. They understand how the other person feels, and they know what to do, and they know what to say to make that person feel even better. I've been thinking about that a whole lot when it comes to what makes a really strong friendship truly strong.
Yes, I think what you said is absolutely true. And Lizzie and Eileen, the two women who are two of the women we follow through the book, that is actually one of the things that's really interesting about their friendship, because in some ways they get each other perfectly, and in other ways they drive each other crazy. And at a certain point, Eileen felt that she needed to pull away from Liz because she didn't like the way Liz was bringing up her children. And it was very interesting. She did not feel that she could actually talk to Liz about it because she felt that it would hurt her feelings too much. It would cause too much of a rift. So the only solution she could find was to pull away. On the other hand, a woman who was in her 60s told me that her very dear friend was getting deaf. And she knew that the friend was very vain and was not getting a hearing aid because she didn't like the way they looked. She wasn't sure that people would still behave the same towards her. She was feeling badly about getting old, whole bunches of reasons. And this woman said, "You know what? I'm still telling her that she's got to get a hearing aid because I love her. And because she's driving us all crazy, and she will be much happier if she gets herself a hearing aid." So she told her friend that she needed to get a hearing aid, and the other woman was very angry, as she had expected she would be, very upset, And then a few weeks later, called her to say she had gotten a hearing aid, and thank you very much.
Oh, interesting. Early in the book, when you talk about how we sometimes have unrealistic expectations for what friendship is supposed to be, you say that, one of the reasons is because many young women, and probably a few boys as well, or young men, experience something called twinning.
Yeah.
Where you essentially hook up with somebody that is all but a twin in terms of being so closely aligned with you in terms of your personality and interests and so on. And probably a lot of us can think about young girls we've had in our families or in our lives in which this phenomenon of twinning has occurred. And of course, if you've experienced that kind of magic, then you even on some sort of subliminal level, sort of hope and expect that all subsequent friendships will include that level of sort of instantaneous and perfect closeness. What did you learn about this phenomenon of twinning as you spoke with these women?
Well, I learned, first of all, that it is an early stage of friendship development for some women in some ways. Twinning means exactly what it sounds like. It's like, you know, women would talk about, we felt like we were sisters under the skin. We felt like we'd been separated at birth. It was just a sense of really connecting. But and that feeling, according to developmental psychologists, is an important part of the developmental process. It's part of how we know that what we think and feel in life is okay if somebody else feels the same way. But it also can be, if it goes on for too long and becomes sort of more of a merger, it can be stultifying to both people. It can interfere with development of a sense of one's own identity. I talked to a lot of women who had experiences of finding out that they were well connected and understood each other really well, and then things would happen and they would start to find out that they were different. One of the women who I talked to had a very, very close friendship with a girl in high school, and they had stayed very, very close in college. They'd actually gone to the same college in order to be together. But in college, they each started to develop in different directions, and it was very painful for them. They actually lost touch for a while. They couldn't tolerate the separateness, but over time they reconnected and they found that their differences were, they'd gone in really different directions, but they were able to feel empowered by their differences, and also each of them felt that they learned something important from the other one. And so their later relationship, which was not nearly as close or intense as the early one had been, was equally meaningful. It was just a different stage of life. So one of the things that I think is really important is it's hard to remember that twinning is a stage of life and a stage of friendship, but it's not the end of it. It's only the beginning, usually.
Right. Interesting. I'm reminded of when my wife and I were in our premarital counseling with our pastor. We took the Myers-Briggs personality test.
Mm-hmm.
When, for anybody listening who's not acquainted, you answer a huge number of questions, and then they share with you then your personality profile, which consists of four different factors, and you can be one of two directions in each of these four, and then you're given sort of a lineup of letters, and that indicates who you are. So there's 16 possible personality profiles altogether, and as it so happened, my wife and I turned out to be the same in two and different in two, and we decided that's perfect because to be exactly the same across the board We didn't particularly like the idea of that, nor did we like the idea of being exactly opposite in all of those aspects. But to share some similarities, to share some dissimilarities, that just seems like a healthy way for a married couple to function, and probably is a healthy way for a lot of friendships to function as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's perfect because there's a lot of research that says that we look for friends who are very much like us. We feel more comfortable with people who share certain qualities with us and share certain experiences. But if we do that too much, then there's no the other person isn't bringing anything to us, and we're not bringing anything to the other person. And there's not room for growth and change.
Hmm. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with F. Diane Barth, and we're talking about her book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. I want to be sure, before we run out of time, to talk about a sort of nastier side to all of this, and I'm so grateful to you for addressing it as forthrightly as you do. There's one chapter in your book called Disillusionment, Betrayal, and Rejection, another called The Joy of Belonging, The Power of Exclusion, Groups, Clubs, and Cliques. I mean, you're touching on something that is all too real, not exclusively in the realm of women's friendships, but certainly we hear a whole lot about this. And we also hear about this happening relatively early in life. That is where, middle school girls would just be brutal with each other in terms of who's in and who's out, who is once upon a time was welcome and then suddenly is just excluded for no discernible reason whatsoever. And, of course, thankfully that tends not to play out quite so brutally as people become adults, but even into adulthood, there is sometimes this really maddening reality at play. What did you learn from talking to women about where this comes from and what can be done about it?
Well, I think it's really important to connect what goes on in adulthood with what goes on in middle school with mean girls and girls, mean girls and girls being mean and girls being bullying. I think one of the problems is that, especially in our culture, but in many cultures around the world, girls and women are supposed to be nice. You know, the old sugar and spice and everything nice is supposed to be what girls are made of. And we don't get taught from very early on, we don't get taught how to deal with angry feelings, aggressive feelings, jealousy and envy, competition, feelings of hurt feelings. We're good at expressing hurt feelings, but we're not good at processing hurt feelings. And I think that in friendships and in the world, it would probably be really useful if women could find some ways to be more open with a lot of these feelings. I talked to one woman who captured, I think, what a lot of women feel, who said that she actually didn't like being friends with women, because she said women are indirect, they're manipulative, and when they're feeling competitive, they do it in an underhanded way or else in a supremely aggressive way. She said women can disappoint you and betray you. She said men are just much more open and direct. I mean, certainly she acknowledged that there are difficulties with men also, and she was making a huge generalization, but her feeling was that this was somebody who was a businesswoman who was comfortable with her own aggression. She felt that was something that women needed to have more experience just putting into our daily lives, so that when somebody betrays us, which happened, I heard so many very sad stories about betrayal, but so that we don't then feel completely crushed by it, we're able to say that's one part of life, or when somebody's competing with us, we don't take it completely personally, or when we are competing with somebody. There are many, many feelings. Women's sexuality doesn't get addressed, but women have sexual feelings towards one another, and that's not really it's not an open part of the discussion in many. I mean, I have straight women who have sexual feelings. So those, my thought after all of these interviews, and by the way, I'm still doing interviews. This was so much fun that I'm still collecting stories. I just can't stop. But but one of the things that I learned is that we really. The title of the book, I Know How You Feel, is only part of the story. Sometimes we don't know how each other feels. And sometimes we don't let ourselves talk about some of the feelings that we don't know about or that we're not comfortable about. And that, I think, is really one of the keys to having richer, more meaningful relationships and feelings about yourself.
By the way, I want to mention that you have a very interesting blog on the website for Psychology Today, and one of your most recent entries is titled Betrayed by Your Best Friend, Six Ways to Heal Your Heart, in which you offer some thoughts on when somebody experiences, you know, one of the most painful things that a friend can experience. In our closing couple of minutes, I think I'd be interested, and I think our listeners would be interested to know how your exploration of friendship between women has affected your own friendships in your own personal life. That is, to what extent do you feel like you are looking at your own friendships and your own friends differently, if you are looking at them differently now, or maybe appreciating them in a way you hadn't before?
That is a great question. I think it impacted my feelings about my friendships in several ways, very intensively. So one of the things that I noticed right away was my becoming aware of the different stages of my own friendship life, the way that I, like many women, had less time for friends when I was in my 30s, 40s, and 50s and was dealing with child-rearing and a career and marriage, and now I have much more time for connecting with women friends. I also found myself appreciating women who had been part of my life for many years and also women who were relatively new into my life in ways that I hadn't really thought about. And then, of course, talking to my women friends about friendship, because that's just sort of the subject that's been on my mind for the last couple of years.
The book, again, is I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, the author, F. Diane Barth. F. Diane Barth, thank you so much for writing this book. It gave me a lot to think about, and I know that many other people who will take it in hand will find it as well a thought-provoking book in the very best sense of the word, getting all of us to think a little more deeply about the friends in our lives. Thank you so much for writing this book and for being part of the morning show today.
Thank you, Greg. This has been great.
And I'm really glad that F. Diane Barth is allowing me to reconnect with her to ask a couple of follow-up questions to our conversation about her book, I Know How You Feel, The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives. For all that we talked about in our main interview, we didn't get to that word heartbreak, which is part of the subtitle of the book. And as a matter of fact, there is an entire chapter of the book in which you talk about how incredibly painful it is when we lose a friend, particularly when we perhaps lose a close friend who dies unexpectedly. That chapter is titled, I think quite appropriately, A Hole in Your Heart, Dealing with Endings and Losses. Describe to our listeners the kind of things that you heard from the many women that you talked about when it comes to this really painful reality.
Well, there's a direct correlation between how much you care about somebody and how much you can be hurt by them, directly, indirectly, purposefully, and inadvertently. But one of the things that a lot of women talked about was loss. And loss came in a lot of different ways. There were many women who talked to me about having lost a beloved friend to illness. One of the women who I quote in the book wrote a beautiful, moving eulogy to her very close friend who had been a poet who died of cancer. And interestingly for them, and then this is not always true, but for the two of them, the process of being together in her illness and in her last days was both healing and, of course, heartbreaking. But that is one of the ways that friends do help one another when they actually able to process a painful experience together. The other side of that coin is many women also talked about the loss of friends who moved away. And one woman in her, I think her late 60s, was telling me about her, she had a very close circle of friends who she said her life just wouldn't be the same without them. They just made life worth living for her. And like many women, she said they had actually helped her marriage stay together because she could talk to her women friends about things she couldn't talk to her husband about. But one of the women, these women were now in their late 60s, early 70s, and they were one of them was widowed, and one was moving away to be with her grandchildren. And this woman said to me that literally, she said, well, she's the person who said to me it left a hole in her heart. And she said that she could not process it with her friend because to talk about it with her friend would make her friend too sad. And so she couldn't tell her about the pain and therefore had to process it on her own.
Hmm. That's really, really hard.
Yes.
Another reality that can be very difficult is that of competitiveness. Between friends, and even between the best of friends, there can be this element that can make things very, very tricky. How did you see this playing out in the women that you spoke with?
Well, this is something I have seen forever, and I have worked with women clients on this forever. The women are not comfortable with competition, even with Title IX, even with all of the work on making women more competitive, there seems to still be some conflict about being overtly competitive. And when it comes up in a friendship, it becomes really complicated because we have trouble tolerating sort of the idea that a friend might want the same thing we want, that she might be wanting to do something to make it so we don't get it. There are all kinds of feelings that are not the feelings that are supposed to be parts of friendship. I quote in the book, there's a really wonderful interview with Serena Williams who talks about how hard it is for a woman to be at the top of her game. She says the male tennis champs will go out and they'll play a really, really hard game against each other, and then they'll go out and have a beer or do something together. She says the women really have troubles with that, that there's a sense of hostility and envy and anger and frustration. So some women find it really hard to be friends with women who they're competitive with. Other women did tell me about being able to be competitive. One woman was telling me a story about having she had a friend who she thought was just beautiful, and every time they went out, they'd go out to a bar together, and the friend would get picked up, and she wouldn't. And so she finally said to the friend, I love you, and I'm really happy that you get, all these dates, but it does terrible things to my ego that you get these guys and I don't. And the next time they went out, the friend, a guy started to talk to the friend, and the friend immediately introduced him to her friend and started to say, all the wonderful things her friend did. And it didn't necessarily mean that the guy got involved with her, but it did touch her that her friend was willing to accept that there was this competitive piece that maybe she could address.
Interesting. The 13th chapter of the book is something a little bit out of the ordinary, because you are highlighting something that you are calling friendship wisdom, the special joy of friendship wisdom. What are you talking about here?
I'm talking about two things. One is that women friends over the years tend to get more comfortable with all of these things that I talk about as difficulties. And I give several examples from older women, although younger women have the wisdom also. But older women who told me about, for example, one 87-year-old woman who was just wonderful was talking about a friend who had always bossed her around, and that they stayed friends for forever. And she said that now that she didn't feel in her 80s, she no longer felt so vulnerable to the friend. She understood that the bossiness was out of the friend's insecurity and also out of the friend's love. But she had learned long ago that she didn't have to take it to heart when her friend bossed her around. She could say no. She could, and they could stay friends. So that's one of the wisdoms of the special friendship wisdom, is really knowing that you can stay friends with conflict. You can love somebody very much and be very deeply connected, even if they don't know how you feel about something. That it doesn't have to be this perfect joining. And the other thing that I think is very special friendship wisdom is the understanding that what's really important are the small details of each other's lives, and that women friends tend to be often just interested in those small details. They don't get bored with each other. They find each other. There's the old joke. Actually, there's a TV commercial that's been going on around recently about with a group of guys and women, and the women are chatting and the men are doing some task, setting something up. And the men are finished and the women are still chatting. The guys say, "Do you think they're going to finish here?" And it's, you know, I mean, that it's sort of a joke about women being chatty, but and clearly not all women are. But the ones who are, and when we're able to join each other and be interested in those little sort of insignificant details of each other's lives, we're really, that's friendship wisdom. That's really what's important.
I like that a lot. There was a lot in your book that I found I could apply to myself and my own friendships, and I suspect that although this is mainly a book about friendships between women, that this is also a book that a man could read, and that certain things you're talking about could be helpful, or at least a point of discussion when it comes to men and women and the friendships which they enjoy as well.
I thank you for saying that. I love that you understand that, and I have found that many men do understand that, and that's been very special. And it's one of the reasons I think it's so important to understand that there is no one way of being friends, either as a man or a woman. I also want to say to you that when I was preparing to talk to you, I looked at your website and I saw that you are very involved in the music world, and that you you teach and you sing and you compose. And I listened to some of your music, and it was just wonderful. So I don't know if this is a hidden part of you, but it's
no,
really
not particularly.
A wonderful part of you.
Well, thank you. You're very kind to say that, and I appreciate your interest. And I certainly appreciated your wonderful book. It gave me lots to think about. Again, it's titled "I Know How You Feel: The Joy and Heartbreak of Friendship in Women's Lives," published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. F. Diane Barth, thank you again.
Thank you, Greg.
Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, a conversation I'm recording later this morning with the highly acclaimed concert pianist Simone Dinnerstein, who is playing a concert Thursday night at Carthage College. It is a very special opportunity indeed to hear a pianist of her renown right here in Kenosha. Thursday evening, we'll talk to her on tomorrow's Morning Show. Wednesday, Nick Berruti and Edson Melendez from the Bell Ensemble talk about their upcoming performance of Pergolesi's comic masterpiece La Seva Padrona. Dr. Art Sear joins us on Thursday for his monthly visit to the program. Support for WGTD and the Morning Show comes from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, offering online degrees in sustainable management and health information management technology. Online degrees for emerging careers from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside in partnership with UW Extension. To learn more, visit uwp.edu. Support also comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago.